Hello and welcome to the opening bell. My name is Matt Christie. Alongside me, as per, is John Denon. We were just talking actually, we were wondering if this was the first one we've done this year. I hope we haven't left it this late to do the first podcast of the year now.
I think we did one pre. But I've been on holiday, Matt.
You have.
And the world grinds to a halt when I'm away.
It does. So, things that have happened since we last spoke is that David Hay has made his return to boxing. And we look ahead also to George Groves having another run at a super middleweight world title this weekend, or starting that run. Let's go back to David Hay. First of all, John, what did you make of it? You watched on television. What did you make of David Hay's performance?
It's hard to read much into it. He did look relatively sharp and heavy-handed, and a lot bigger, actually. Even on TV, you could see that he looked like he'd really bulked up during all this time he's been out. But was he as fast as he normally is? And I think because Damore was such a sort of meek opponent who crumbled so quickly and was destroyed so quickly, what can you really read into it? Other than the fact that Hayes still clearly a draw, if as many people as advertised watched on Dave, and you know, it looked like there was a good atmosphere there.
There was a really good atmosphere. It was like a party kind of atmosphere. Like
party with Benedict Cumberbatch. It must have been amazing.
Well, Benedict and I didn't get to hang out, I'm afraid.
He's always hated you ever since Sherlock Holmes season 3, which, to be fair, was quite a step down in class.
But you're right, you can't draw too much from the David Hay fight against Mark Damore. There was a lot of criticism about Mark Damore as an opponent, as ever. That criticism really gathered pace after the event. It wasn't quite so strong before. I think people were perhaps seduced a little bit by the number 10 ranking with the WBA and the promises of an upset victory.
And he talked a good game.
He did, and he
seemed up for it.
And I believe that he was up for it. I believe that he was up for it beforehand, but certainly his approach changed. I think David Hay stepped in and landed a dipping jab to the body early on, and it seemed to just persuade Mark Damore that perhaps he might be out of his depth, and any game plan just rapidly went out the window, and he just got himself beaten up quite severely and quite quickly. But as you say, there's very little that we can draw from that, apart from the fact that David Hay is still popular, he still divides opinion, and he can still punch.
Did you enjoy it, Matt?
Did I enjoy it?
Do you enjoy anything anymore?
I do. I enjoy a lot of things, actually. I am quite a... Anyway, let's not go down that road. I thought it was okay. It was what it was. It's just a statement that he's back, and everybody look at me, take notice. But I think the time for true analysis will come on the next steps of the journey, and it may not be until the third comeback fight. I suspect that we've kind of got any answers, or we've got any kind of opposition that can provide those answers.
Yeah, I mean, because he was always going to come back against a soft touch, wasn't he? I suppose one of the disappointing things is the undercard was so bad that they should have at least put some, you know, they didn't have to be like world title fights, but they could have at least put some good domestic scraps on there.
Yeah, it was a disappointing undercard. I didn't find it, underwhelming. A better word to describe would be underwhelming. It was different to normally when you go to an event of that size, the undercards are stacked. Not necessarily with great fights or great matchups, but they're stacked, and sometimes that can become a bit too much. So in that respect, it was a bit different. You didn't feel drained from watching boxing as you sometimes can when you sit through cards that go on for
7 hours.
Go on for hours and hours. However, the undercard did miss a trick, I think. But, you know, David Hay, I suspect, wanted to be the main attraction there, which he very much was. I mean, there was no boxing at all for over an hour before he entered the ring.
In all that break, Cumberbatch still didn't come to say hi?
No, Cumberbatch didn't come and say hi at all. I was just eyeballing him, and he wouldn't come over. But, you know, as an event, it really did show. And what I did like, actually, about the night was when David Hay came out to really, really mad, happy support, the smile on his face, which was a genuine, genuine smile. And just for a moment, you really sense that he was absolutely delighted to be there and genuinely touched by the support that he was getting. But what I found interesting afterwards was that, because I left and I was kind of overheard what the view from a few members that had paid to see it was, and it wasn't one of universal adoration that the cheers beforehand may have suggested. There, I think some people felt that there should have been somebody else in there, but all talk, pretty much to a man, was Joshua. Everyone would see David Hay versus Anthony Joshua, which to me just makes, I think that'd be an absolutely stonking event. I really do. It would be the one after Quigg Frampton. It would be the British matchup that I'd really like to see. Brooke Khan as well, but yeah. Hey, Joshua, I think would outdo all of those in terms of business and interest.
Yeah, it would be huge. Because I was about to ask where you think his comeback is going to end up. Like, do you think he will get to fight Joshua? Do you think he'll go another route? And when do you think he'll get the sort of major fight you'd expect this comeback to reach?
I suspect he'll have another fight where it'll be, I don't know, there's a lot of people that are kind of calling David Hay out, but I would imagine it will be the third fight where he meets someone who would be, people will say that the opponent has got a chance, and he may get to a point where he wins a belt, perhaps. But I think, if you put a gun to my head, that he will lose another fight. You know, he's not gonna win five fights, clear up the division, and then retire. I just don't think David Hay is the fighter that he was anymore. But he's a fantastic addition to the division.
Dangerous for anyone.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely anyone from anyone in that world top 10, you'd give David Hay a real, real good chance with. But I think it's going to be interesting to see. You know, his stamina was always a bit of an issue, even when he was at cruiserweight. There was concerns about his stamina, and you do just wonder if he's taken five or six rounds. You know, how he's going to cope. I say that. And there was a lot of talk about his concerns about his stamina, and he looked quite comfortable going 12 with Vladimir Klitschko, but it wasn't really a grueling battle, was it?
No.
So I think it is fascinating. I think it is fascinating, and as I mentioned in the column,
very good column this week, mate.
Our website experienced some real attention, didn't it? During the David Hay fight, which shows, yeah. And considering that you could watch it on free-to-air Dave, you could watch it on YouTube as well, and the fact that people were turning up in their thousands to read the live blog as well just shows that they just couldn't get enough of him whether it was to feed it an interest or fuel hatred towards him. David Hay's back, and people are watching. I mean, what about you? I mean, how far do you think he can go in the in his comeback?
You know, I think the market forces would direct him to a massive fight with Joshua, not this summer, but summer 2017.
Summer 2017?
Yeah.
So that would mean that he'd probably need to fight, because he's fighting, what did he say, April?
So yeah, no, May is May. the next date. So May 21, perhaps.
Okay.
Not 100% sure, but he is fighting in May, so maybe he'll fight three times this year.
You'd imagine.
So yeah, two more times this year.
Then
once early 2017, and you know, in a massive. If they can find a stadium big enough for it, it would be by then. It'd be massive, because Joshua's going to fight. He's fighting in April. No opponent quite yet. He'll be fighting April, summer, and maybe at the end of the year as well. So I can see it building in that direction. I think that's a fight, obviously, Sky would like to have. But then they could well have some big fights this summer. Like, you know, they could have the Klitschko Fury rematch. They could have Brooke Khan. I don't think that's out of the frame.
No, neither do I. Neither do I.
But then, you know, Joshua Hay 2017 makes even more sense. Hay gets a little bit further into his comeback, so he'll be a bit better. Obviously, Josh has got to continue developing, but he will have in over a year's time. That'll be pretty good.
Do you think Hay will be a bit better by then? Do you think that might be a bit too low? It'd be 36. So, I mean, if you were David Hay's camp, and you knew that Anthony Joshua wanted to fight you, which, you know, may or may not be the case, but would you want to fight would you want to fight Anthony Joshua now if you were David Hay?
You probably well, it depends. You probably, to maximise your chances of winning,
yes,
you're gonna want to fight him as soon as possible, because Josh is probably only gonna get better.
Yes.
But to maximise the money
you
make
old,
for
the old Bunsen burner.
Both of those. Like, yeah, Hay's profile will be even bigger after a few more fights against a little sterner opposition. Joshua's already got a big profile, but it's going to be even bigger.
No, I think you...
What?
I don't know.
You're just thinking of money.
I'm thinking of the old Bunsen burner. Yeah, nice little learner.
Is that what it means?
Yes.
I wonder why you keep saying Bunsen. I thought it was a weird Birmingham thing.
No, it was from an episode of The Office, isn't it? He says Bunsen burner, nice little learner. David Hay, Anthony Joshua.
Would it be, make sense, don't you reckon?
Yeah, it does make sense. I'm not, you know, I just wonder how long David Hay is going to be around, if he can't maybe get an Anthony Joshua fight secured by the end of the year, and if at the end of the year he's got, you know, he's earned millions and millions, is he gonna stick around, do you think? I suspect the money on the table for a Joshua fight would be enough to keep him.
But people, when they start developing a healthy money collection, do like adding
a bit
to
more,
it.
Yeah.
And is he gonna have millions and millions by the end of this year?
Well,
obviously, he's got, from that first fight, you know, I have no idea what he made out of it, but he has. He might have had a nice
bunch, nice little earner.
But he certainly got himself a big audience now.
Yeah.
So the next couple he could certainly do quite well out of.
Who would be the ideal next opponent? Malik Scott's making a lot of noise about wanting that fight. There's a few there which would relish the purse, the exposure, and the chance to fight David Hay. Who would be the ideal next step?
Someone like Steve Cunningham would be quite credible.
You think it would?
Not incredible, but but you know, because outside of the tight lists, who is there who's that exciting? You know, I don't really care about Lucas Brown fighting Ruslan Chagaev in Grozny.
Who does?
And, you know, what else is out there? So it's got to be someone high. Actually, yeah, no, there are more credible options than Steve Cunningham, like Bermain Stiverne. Luis Ortiz is very dangerous, so you don't think he'd sort of risk that before he could get to one of the big people. Bermain Stiverne, former world champion, that'll be a pretty credible win. Or you could just fight Shannon Briggs. Easy money.
Boost his world ranking with the WBA.
Yeah. Because Malik Scott got you know, collapsed so quickly against Deontay Wilder, yeah. I don't think, you know, you don't really have a lot to gain.
He's one of the favourites, isn't he, to fight David Haye next, Malik? Isn't he the favourite?
I think, from the odds we've got on our side.
The bookies wouldn't just go through the world heavyweight rankings and pluck a name out and go, right, he's a favourite. There's a reason why he's a favourite, is there not? There's a reason why...
It must be.
There was a reason why Andre Berto was favourite to fight Floyd Mayweather for a long time before that fight was announced. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be Malik Scott, but
yeah,
they'll have got some information from somewhere.
Yeah. And Malik Scott, he has been around in... He's been around, you know, around all these sort of big heavyweight fights. And he was around Dillian White's camp. He was around in America for Deontay Wilder. So he is looking for work. An interesting one, we did a sort of poll on the Boxing News Twitter, and we gave a few options for who people wanted David Haye to fight next, and it wasn't Joshua who won the poll, it was Dillian White. It's a good fight.
I'm not sure, without being disrespectful to Dillian White, what Dillian White... I wouldn't give Dillian White much of a chance, to be honest. But I think he would... He would certainly be a several steps up from Mark DeMori, and I think it would be a fight that would sell very well. You could see it kind of turning into a grudge match again
very quickly. I don't know. White's quite big, heavy-handed and tough.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got youth on his side, so I don't think David Haye would be... You know, David Haye obviously hits very hard, but would he be able to take him out instantly? And then as the rounds progress, if you get past 4, 5 or 6, you know, at his age, after that long out into his comeback, I think it's a fair fight.
You're telling me it's a 50-50 fight, John?
Well, I'll pick Dillian to win. Not based on any reason.
Yeah, I hear you. But do you think David Haye would take that fight, perhaps considering some of the reasons that you've just mentioned? And also, Dillian White is probably likely to be ranked below David yeah. Haye in the world rankings in each of the governing bodies. I suspect David Haye will make an appearance back in all four major governing bodies rankings. Dillian White, I would imagine, is just ranked in the WBC rankings, and the only reason that is because they do a top 40. So for that reason, is that... On paper, you could say that Dillian White was a step down from Mark DeMori, couldn't you?
You'd be a brave man to say that.
But you know what I mean. You know what I'm trying to say. I'm not sure that. I'm not sure they would go for that as the next step.
They definitely want someone who's ranked highly in the top tens of all the governing bodies, because they want to get to a world title fight.
Well, this is why I thought that Carlos Takam might be a good shout for them. Him and he's been mentioned for Joshua as well, in an IBF eliminator. But Carlos Takam is someone that you think does tick all the boxes. He doesn't look like the fighter he was a few years ago, and he wasn't, again, no offence meant, but he didn't look like a world beater a few years ago.
So you're saying he's not the fighter he was a few years ago, and he wasn't that good a few years ago.
Effectively,
anyway,
is what I'm saying, yeah. And he is hot. He's got a world ranking with all four of the governing bodies. I think he's 6'2", so he's quite stocky, and he's the kind of fighter I think that...
Yeah, and is he highly ranked with the IBF as well?
Yeah, he's quite highly ranked.
Which could lead him to Charles Martin, who is the world's most popular heavyweight champion for other boxers wanting to fight.
Yeah, the most marked heavyweight for quite some time. So it's all interesting. Let's look ahead to this weekend. George Groves is back. Shane McGuigan is in his corner, who, of course, is now guiding David Haye. Groves has underachieved following the first Karl Frotch fight, correct?
To an extent. Yeah. As in, he did so well in that fight. But then in the second Frotch fight, it was a pretty close until until the knockout came.
It was, well,
which I know
it was
sounds, I know it sounds a bit weird to say, but it just shows it was that kind of a, that was a good performance from Groves. He just lost. It was just the manner. It's just he lost so conclusively.
But it's certainly fair to say that following that first Carl Froch fight, George Groves' reputation was far higher than it is right now.
Yeah, well, I think the perception would be generally, if you lost three world title fights, then that's it.
I know what Carl Froch's perception would be, and that would be that he's been cobra'd. When a fighter has a run of form, and I thought he got to a point in the Badu Jack fight, number one, before the fight started, I was convinced he was going to win.
Yeah.
He seemed mentally in the right place. Physically, he looked good. And he got to a point after he had a, started brightly, then got dropped towards the end of the round and worked his way back in. And after maybe five, six rounds, I'm saying all this from memory, but after five or six rounds, I thought, right, he's going to win this now. And then it all just went wrong for him over the last... And I thought that he deserved to lose. I thought he deserved to lose that decision. I'm not saying it wasn't a relatively close fight, but no part of me thought he'd won that fight. And I think, again from memory, that not many journalists, including several British ones, thought he'd won it either. But it's quite rare for a fighter to go on a run of form this indifferent after such a devastating defeat to then turn it around.
So since the second fight. He's performed poorly, or
not to his standards. So I think there's a lot of work to do there, but there's a lot of talent to work with. Could George Groves? Is it feasible? How old is George Groves?
He's only 27.
27, but is it feasible at the age of 27, George Groves' best days are behind him?
It's possible. Was Groves' best night back in 2011 when he fought James DeFort and beat James DeGale?
Maybe. Or the first five rounds of the Carl Froch fight could have been his. I don't know how. It's a difficult one, isn't it? Groves obviously went into the first Froch fight convinced he was going to win. Very, very confident. Cocky almost as well. Yeah. This is what I'm going to do to you tomorrow. I'm going to land this shot, and you're going to. And that's when he went in and did, in the first round. But slowly, perhaps, that confidence has deteriorated slightly.
Yeah.
And with the realisation that he's not an invincible man, that there are people out there that can beat him. And that can really play havoc, I think, in the mind of a fighter, particularly in the midst of battle. So I'm fascinated to see what happens with George Groves. I think it's a good matchup for him this weekend. It's a sensible fight that they've put together for him. But he needs to look good, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, it's more, it's almost like he wasn't boxing technically as well as he could have done or he should have been doing. Against Rabrat in his comeback fight after losing to Froch, he sort of threw a lot of punches, but nothing was really telling. And whereas a few years before, he was like,
I don't know. Sorry, carry on.
You're thinking of Bunsen.
It's because I saw your hands move. I thought you were going to please do it again. Sorry, go on, carry on.
He didn't seem like he was hitting that cleanly or sharply, and he just didn't seem as dangerous as he had earlier. And that could be, some technical things as well. So maybe the link up with Shane McGuigan already worked for him.
I hope so. What does he need to do? Because it looked like he would beat Badu Jack and then James DeGale, George Groves would be one of those fights that we were talking about before, almost as big as, say, Quig Frampton, etc., and Brooke Kahn. It would be one of those super fights. It didn't happen. Beating DeLuisa, is it? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, DeLuisa.
Beating him at the weekend isn't going to be enough to get a James DeGale fight, or is it, do you think?
I don't think there's a huge appetite on not that De Gea's afraid of fighting him, but more that I don't think he's, there's still that lingering animosity, and De Gea doesn't want to do him any favours. I think De Gea would rather kind of go and beat Badou Jack and sort of, you know, be one up on Groves there and unify titles. So I think it would have to be, there would have to be quite a lot of money on the table to make it happen. But it's possible, because I think, you know, I think Groves can certainly improve. I think over the last few years, maybe since the second Froch fight, he's kind of been going backwards. But, you know, if he makes technical improvements with Shane McGuigan and starts basically performing better, even if it's against humble opposition, and he feels like he's boxing better, I think then on the psychological side, the confidence will come back with how he's boxing. So yeah, I think he's far too young to be written off, and still talented to get, you know, to get back in the mix. But you know, he got to his world title fight with Badou Jack quite quickly. I think it's going to be a longer road to get to another world title fight, but I think that's possible. You know, we'll see what happens with Arthur Abraham, whether he beats Ramirez. Ramirez may look beatable. Abraham may look like he's getting older. There's what Chudinov as a WBA super middleweight title, who's actually, I don't think he's punching pretty hard. I think you just want to protect George Groves for a while so the confidence and the skills come back. But ultimately, a fight with De Gea would still be a huge grudge match, even if De Gea was the only one of the pair to have a world title. The fact that it was Groves who beat him before makes it a very big sellable fight.
I think to the public at large, to the general sporting fan, irrespective of what's happened to Groves since the Froch fights, I mean, they may not be overly aware of it, but they'll certainly remember George Groves. I think it would still be a massive event, James De Gea against George Groves. Is there anyone else that De Gea could fight where he could earn the sort of money that he would earn against George Groves? Let's presume that Groves looks good at the weekend, and then starts making noise about James De Gea. Is there anyone else that James De Gea could fight where he would earn the sort of money that would be on the table for a George Groves rematch?
I don't know, how big would Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., you know, in Las Vegas, be in America as well?
I don't know.
Other than that, is there anyone to beat? I don't know. I think, yeah, it's hard to think of any fight that would be bigger at super middleweight.
Abraham, if Abraham De Gea was to happen over in Germany, that might be a big money spinner for
De Gea. Yeah, and one that would be bigger, one that would be big would be De Gea, Chris Eubank Jr. Like, you may not think Eubank Jr. deserves it, but he does carry a lot of, he's well known. That, I think he just captures the public's imagination with the Eubank name, with how he conducts himself. That would be a big one. And if Golovkin moved up, that would be huge.
True.
So actually, you could see a lot of exciting options for De Gea.
Okay, so let's go back to talking about George Groves. What can Shane McGuigan add to George Groves?
You know, I think McGuigan can instill confidence in him, because McGuigan seems very sort of rational and reasonable and persuasive.
Yes.
So it's more, I think, you know, rather than like spinning a story, he could give him, you know, concrete reasons to have belief in himself, whether it's the particular technical things they've worked on or how to win the fight. And clearly McGuigan's work with Carl Frampton has impressed a lot of boxers who really know their stuff. And also, you know, I think if Groves had been stopped by Badou Jack, then he'd have lost three world title fights inside the distance, and that would have been a disaster. I think the fact that, okay, he didn't win it on points, but wasn't boxing to his best and got through, means it shouldn't be the end of the road.
Is there also is Badou Jack better than advertised, perhaps?
I think so, yeah. He's kind of quite, he's just, he doesn't look that great, but he is quite difficult to beat.
Yes.
And what we, I did an interview with Groves earlier this week, and he, and his, one of the things he was saying is that he'd sort of stopped doing what he does best. So he didn't go into too much detail about, you know, I guess he said he's something like he neglected what he was all about. So whether that's getting back on his jab or seeing that sort of crisp right hand coming back, maybe it's sort of getting back to what he was doing right before, and maybe it'll be a case of working with what's already there, but kind of rediscovering it. I don't see why Shane McGuigan wouldn't be the man to do that. And it's certainly, you know, Shane's a young trainer, but he's a young enthusiastic trainer, and he's got a young enthusiastic team with him. And I think that's, you know, Groves, even though he's not old, is sounding increasingly bitter and cynical about the sport. And I think, you know, boxing does do that to people, you know, even at a high level. So it could be a good environment to be working in as well.
We haven't mentioned the name Paddy Fitzpatrick yet. Has he been made? And he was obviously the coach that came between Adam Booth and Shane McGuigan. Has he been made a bit of a scapegoat in all this? Speaking to Callie Sowland before Christmas for a feature that was in Boxing News fairly recently, and he made no secret of the fact that he thought that the Paddy's corner work during the Badou Jack fight was abysmal. And with another cornerman, George Groves would have won that fight. But has too much blame been put at the feet of Paddy Fitzpatrick, do you think?
Well, yeah, but maybe it's not quite such a simple case of, you know, often the trainer gets blamed for a loss and the boxer moves on without looking at himself, which would be, you know, that would be a mistake to do that. But Groves is clearly still unhappy with what he was being told in the corner during the Badou Jack fight, and he was also saying that he'd sort of lost confidence in Paddy before that fight. But then, you know, it's also the boxer's responsibility. He must have, you know, he chose his trainer, and he'd had a few fights with him. And if he's saying now that he was unhappy with it before the fight, then, you know, maybe he could have looked for a new trainer at an earlier stage before he got to his third world title fight. So it could have been his sort of pride and stubbornness that made him stick with it.
One last question before we move on. How feasible is it that George Groves loses this weekend?
I think I can't see it happening. He might not walk through him and have it easy as we expect him to, but I can't see him. I would be shocked if he lost. Mate, you know, not as shocked as seeing Luke Campbell lose to Ivan Mendy, but it would be a huge shock.
One more question. What do you think of his Barnet?
I think it's fabulous, Matt.
So I like it too. Top-notch haircut for George Groves at last.
The one thing he's missing is a Peaky Blinders hat.
True, true. Okay, so let's move on to Sergey Kovalev. Just briefly talk about this before we finish. Kovalev in against Jean-Pascal in the first fight was entertaining enough. I didn't think it was a classic. I certainly didn't think it merited a sequel.
Yeah.
But so here we go again in a stay busy exercise, and all of a sudden it's kind of spiralled out of control into some whole race war
between Kovalev and Pascal.
Yeah, it's all got a little bit unsavoury. Do we think that Jean-Pascal, now we've mentioned there, Groves has moved on to McGuigan, Pascal is now with Freddie Roach. Can the Freddie Roach factor help Pascal in this fight? And Pascal is a lot older than Groves. a lot more battle worn as well. I would guess at the age of 33. Can he improve on that first fight with Kovalev?
Yeah, as you know, Freddie Roach is obviously a great coach, but it seems a little bit too late and not enough time to make a huge difference to Jean Pascal. I was surprised when this rematch got made because I thought Kovalev won the first one like pretty comprehensively. I thought he really battered him.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure.
I seem to remember Pascal had a moment maybe in the fifth round, or it might have been a bit earlier in the fight, where he was getting. I mean, he wasn't finding Kovalev hard to hit, but there was a moment where Kovalev. Stumble would be too, but there was just a point where Pascal looked like he was on top very, very briefly, and bear in mind there were 7 completed rounds, and I'm talking about a period of 30 seconds or so. So yeah, me too. I was completely surprised why they made the rematch.
Then, you know, everyone seems to be losing their minds this week with, you know, the various accusations they're slinging against each other. So maybe something mental will happen in the fight. Kovalev's trainer certainly seems angry, which probably isn't hugely helpful before a world title fight.
No, I mean, I think there's a feature with Kovalev. We had exclusive access to Sergei while he was in his training camp, and Sergei kind of talks about his mindset in that he will not fight angry.
He just stared at me looking a bit angry when you said that. That was quite interesting.
Just because he won't doesn't mean I... <Yeah. laughs>
You talk angry, Matt.
I mean, I just can't... I'm struggling to make a case for Pascal in any way in this fight. I think that's what I'm... I'm trying to think, well, if Kovalev comes out and he's furious and he's fighting a crazy fight, then maybe Pascal can take advantage, but...
If that happens, he'll probably just win it quicker, won't he?
You would think, wouldn't you? I think my prediction would be Kovalev inside 5.
Yeah, I think making Kovalev angry is probably a bad mistake.
Yeah. Okay. So the plan then would be for, and please God let this happen. The plan then is Adonis Stevenson and Andre Ward. Which both of those fights are markedly more interesting than this Pascal rematch. Is that likely? Is that in this difficult world of boxing, in this complicated world of boxing, is that path likely to materialise for Sergei Kovalev?
I think the Stevenson fight is already falling through before it's barely been discussed. Well, not, I mean, it's been endlessly talked about. But surely... Andre Ward Kovalev has to happen, right? Surely.
You'd think so. I mean, Andre Ward seemed, he did a round media roundtable in Las Vegas. I think it was just before the Cotto Alvarez fight in November, and he was absolutely adamant that that is the fight that he wants. It's the fight he's been promised, and it's the fight that he's working towards. So I've got confidence that that will happen.
Yeah, and like HBO. Broadcast both of them, don't they? And they must, surely they want it, otherwise what big fight is there for either of them if Stevenson's out of the picture?
It's just such a shame that these fights that Kovalev Stevenson could be a victim of boxing politics, that, you know, we're still yet to get any kind of clarification if Alvarez will go in with Golovkin. I just think it's absolutely vital this year to build on the successes of last, for these fights to happen. And I think, particularly for new fans, to retain any interest in the sport, they need to be seeing that the fights they want to happen, they have to happen. They've just got to happen. Okay, is there anything else you want to talk about? I've got to go. I'm going back to Bromley Land for the weekend.
Weird if I just sat talking when you left.
Okay, well, we'll call it a day there. So yeah, as I said earlier, there's lots in this week's issue. Really pleased with the way the magazine's been looking recently. It's quite a mix of stuff in there. We've got that exclusive with Sergei Kovalev. we preview the fight in depth. There's a fascinating interview with Shane McGuigan. All this is exclusive, of course. Then we go into the Groves preview. There's some ringside reports from last week, including Danny Garcia's win over Robert Guerrero, which we didn't talk about, I'm afraid. There is also a fascinating look at the hectic life of a boxing promoter. Joe de Guardier does an interview with us, and as usual there is a fantastic
amateur section.
So everyone, please go out. If you haven't looked at boxing news in a while, go and have a look at it. Let us know what you think of it, and we will be back. There's no reason why we won't be back next week, is there?
No, there's no reason why we won't be back next week.
Okay, so hopefully we'll be back this time next week, where we'll be looking back and, of course, looking forward. Thanks, everybody, for your continued support, and thank you very much for listening.